we begin by getting on the telephone and welcoming in our friend, the talented writer and critic, Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
What's up, R-Dog?
How dare you, Colin? How dare you like the ballet?
I do. I love that ballet. Not going to lie. Well into the ballet, and I go to the ballet often. Of course, I go by myself, but I go to most things I go to by myself. And I suppose probably if you scan the demographic at the ballet, I stick out a little bit. It's not usually a single male type of venue, but there I am. But as you know, as we have documented on this fine radio program of yours for quite a spell now, I'm into many, many, many forms of art, and I see a lot of overlap between them. And to me, I don't think the ballet should be any different.
Well, no, not at all. And yet, as you point out in a new piece at Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com, you got a lot of grief from people, and many of them supposedly from that ever so tolerant side of the ledger.
Yeah, for this piece. Now, the headline, which I didn't write, it said something like, liberals were shunning me. And it wasn't like a liberal left or a right thing. It was, because I'm a straight male, and this was on a dating app, and I happened to have a shirt on where I had the Boston Ballet shirt, and I had on a Red Sox hat, too, backwards, which I wear quite often. And so, I don't know, kind of represented a number of my polarities at once, although I don't think there's a ton of difference, really, between baseball and ballet, necessarily. And I would get these things from women where it would be, are you trying to hoodwink? Well, they wouldn't say hoodwink, but are you trying to trick women into thinking you're arty? It's like, yeah, that's what I do. I sit around my cauldron, stirring violently, and thinking, I will dupe you into going out on a date with me. Leaving out that I've been on like one date that lasted for 5 minutes in like 2.5 years. But it was these constant allegations that I couldn't actually like the ballet. And it's like we have such blinders on now that we can't like anything unless we are told to like it. And I think what ends up happening is people spend a lot of time partaking of things that they don't actually have any real interest in, because it's just what the mob partakes of. The mob is on this bloated kind of path. And if you just step off the path for a little bit, you can find things that actually dovetail with who you are, what you care about, what you're going to be into, what you're going to get others into, and what is going to be something that you end up enjoying a lot more.
Well, and what fascinates me is, I mean, this is a dating app, so obviously you want to communicate in the quickest way possible, like a photo, what some of your interests and your passions are, so that perhaps somebody who shares those would be interested in experiencing them with you. That would seem to be the whole point of even having some kind of a profile picture.
It would be, but it's very much a case of more than ever, like attracts like. And you want to be, I guess, in the limited sense, entirely mediocre and in the meaty part of the curb, so you can meet some other schlub like yourself who's going to be like, oh, I can stay and I can go out and I like Netflix. And yeah, great. And people will just say to me, oh, what was your week like? Or what branch of the arts are you in? And my heart sinks to my feet because it's like, how am I going to begin to go into this with you? Like in some sort of thumbnail kind of way. It's complicated. It's historically unique, and it's not something that I can convey in, like, a text. So, yeah, there was this photo, and I thought, you know what? It's a ballet. I met this one woman once, well, not in person, and she had, like, ridiculous, like, educational credentials, which I find usually mean absolutely nothing. I'd rather meet someone who didn't go to college than someone who did and was boasting about Harvard and Yale and all of that. And she says to me, well, you know what? I will never go to a museum with you unless it's the Louvre. I'm thinking like, you really don't grasp the concept of museums, do you? It's not like the Van Goghs are just in that one museum. It's like they're in all the museums. You can go to St. Louis and see the Van Goghs. But it was like for this photo op to say, I went to the Louvre, and you can slap it up on Facebook. And she said, she rattled off a number of other things. And she said, but beyond everything else, the thing I will never do is go to the ballet with you. This wasn't like for a season subscription, like we are hardcore, we are Nijinsky, we're into this. It was like just to go like once on occasion. And if you can't kill 90 minutes of your life at the ballet between something you focus on, whether it's the music, whether it's the choreography, whether it's the athleticism, whether it's the scenery, whatever it may be, then I don't know what can really sustain your mind with any sort of point in your life anywhere. And so this obviated my need to ever meet this person because I thought, what can we do? Could we go do like a sports bar? Like, does sports bother you? It just seemed like everything. Oh, and she also wouldn't hike. So we were really like limited to this kind of hermetic bubble.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, I also have to compliment you for using a term that I use, and I'm glad you do as well, a weather eye. I did appreciate that indeed. But why do people want everyone else to be so one-dimensional in their lives? Because you and I, and you're even more diverse in your interests than I am, but we like a lot of different things. And to me, that's what makes people interesting, is when they're not locked into just one thing that they're so passionate about that it's become an obsession and that's all they care about and all they can speak about.
Because people are terrified that they're going to find out, I think, that they're lacking. I'm not saying that they are lacking, because I think the human spirit and condition as such is that it can sort of, they can be poured into a number of vessels, and they will take up the shape of the actual vessel, whether it's tubular, whether it's ovular, whatever it may be. If it's worthy, the human condition can pour into it and basically find what I think is at the shape in that sort of new home. But what people are worried about is that they're not going to be up to snuff. They're not going to be worthy. If they venture outside of the familiar, if they take the hand away from the face, that the eyes won't be able to adjust to the various forms of light they see. And I think it becomes a security issue. And then it becomes a confidence issue where you are going out. It's like you can have the exact same work. You can have, say it's the Beatles, right? And it's the end of 1963. And this label out of Chicago, VJ, releases their singles. I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, blah, blah, blah. For me, deal. Nothing happens. No one buys those records. No one can be arsed to purchase them. A few months later, February, massive marketing campaign, the exact same records come out. Millions of people buy them. And part of the reason they are buying them, yeah, the Beatles are great, but it doesn't matter if the Beatles are just great if people do not feel like they are partaking of a community, a group, a mob, rather than individuality. Because we don't often have the confidence to be individual, whereas that's never been an issue for me. I'll sit at the ballet, I will go to the aquarium, and I will elbow youngsters out of the way to get to the touch tank. Granted, I'm on cameras all over Boston and surrounding environs, and some of the things I go to, they probably have like me, like, this guy a pedophile? Why is he always going to like theatrical productions of Charlotte's Web? But there I am, and no one has ever like said to me, well, this isn't masculine enough, anything of that. People, conversely, they tend to be very intimidated by me. And one of the reasons is because I'm so comfortable following my assorted passion.
But I don't view you as being particularly judgmental. If you met someone interesting on this app and they said to you, hey, I noticed you like the ballet. I don't know much about ballet, but I would love to experience that. You seem to me like the kind of person who would welcome the opportunity to introduce them to that subject.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm looking for in a way, because I have learned sadly that people really don't know anything about anything. I've met people who will go on and on and on about what a Miles Davis expert they are. And you find out that they have Kind of Blue and nothing else. Or this one person, New Yorker editor. Absolute moron. And his whole thing was, I know everything about The Who. It's like, dude, you have the greatest hits. you don't even own like a bootleg. And it's not like bootlegs, how they used to be, that you had to seek out the independent record store and go into the back room and thumb through the racks. You can just like go to guitars101.com and you can download. You can even have FLAC files if you wish. And so what I look for, and I don't find it, is someone just with an open mind, someone who has confidence and maybe doesn't need to be the smartest person in the room, but will be the smartest person in most rooms they ever enter, and Socratic wisdom. Socratic wisdom basically allows you to have a blank slate that you can build upon. It's a kind of very Voltaire-esque notion of cultivate your garden. But first, you have to trust that the patch of vegetation you're walking amidst can be your garden. And I would love to have someone say, look, I don't really go to a lot of museums or whatever, and we'll go for a couple hours. It'll be a blast, because I think, and we've proven that here, I think my writing bears this out too, that things that like you think might just be for a select group of people or maybe not your group of people, that's only because you've not experienced it maybe in the best way, or someone hasn't done the best job presenting it to you. Because looked at, like really, you can draw a lot of overlap, a lot of imbrication between something like hockey in the ballet or a Mozart piano sonata in the ballet. It's all geometry. Nijinsky could watch Wayne Gretzky play hockey and be like, that makes sense to me, the way he's going about this. And I think it just really comes down to having someone escort you around and be like, this is cool. And then they do the same thing for you with their things, and that's called connection and a life together.
Colin Fleming, read his latest at Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com. Check out the website, of course, ColinFlemingLit.com. And next week, I can't wait for this, we're going to talk about Orson Welles and the new old film, The Other Side of the Wind, which I've now seen about half of. I don't know. Can you give me a preview of your reaction? I'm very curious.
Well, someone at the Starbucks thought I was watching porn today. Just out in the open when I was watching this, like having a steamed apple juice, like I'm four. And I realized, like, huh, you might want to cover this up. But I will say this for people who haven't seen The Other Side of the Wind yet. It looks unlike any film has ever looked in terms of, like, its visual signature. And Citizen Kane can come on. You've probably experienced this. You're flipping through the stations. Citizen Kane is on. You don't even know at first that it's Citizen Kane until you realize how low the camera is and you see the ceiling, right? Because Welles and Toland literally cut a hole in the floor to shoot up. And you recognize it. And Welles was the master of the long take. Well, this is sort of the ultimate film for the quick edit. The number of edits, if you find yourself like starting to count them, it must be like 200,000 edits in this film. It's insane. There's no film that looks remotely like it.
No, and if you think that, you know, the people that made The Office invented that style of mockumentary, or even Christopher Guest for that matter, Orson Welles beat you by a few decades. I think it's remarkable. And I also love the documentary that's a companion piece, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead.
Ricky Gervais, now, I consider that the proper Office.
Yes.
He got a lot from both Laurel and Hardy, so did Orson Welles, and from Welles himself. And it's, you know, if you want to put it again in musical terms, Beatle terms, it's like Orson Welles decided he was going to do a concept film, Sgt. Pepper style, and not like be a professional filmmaker, but be a professional filmmaker doing an amateur, many amateurs version of a film cobbled together via the kind of double album contained excess, sort of oxymoron, of the White Album. It is like the beginning. He's in the car. You know how difficult it is to move a camera around like that in that little space and edit it the way he did? Like, you watch, it's like, you are so much better, dude, at making films than anyone else. You're just more skilled. You have more talent. And I thought it was very exciting.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait to talk about it with you in detail next week. Colin, thank you. As always, have a great week, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good.
That's Colin Fleming with us every Tuesday on Downtown.